About 4 clicks from the base was a large lake of frozen hydrogen. One of our most important maneuvers was to learn how to get around on the treacherous stuff. It wasn't too difficult. You couldn't stand up on it, so you had to belly down and sled. If you had somebody to push you from the edge, getting started was no problem. Otherwise, you had to scrabble with your hands and feet, pushing down as hard as was practical until you started moving in a series of little jumps. Once started, you'd keep going until you ran out of ice. You could steer a little bit by digging in, hand and foot on the appropriate side, but you couldn't slow to a stop that way. So it was a good idea not to go too fast and wind up positioned in such a way that your helmet didn't absorb the shock of stopping. We went through all the things we'd done on the Miami side. Weapons practice, demolition, attack patterns. We also launched drones at irregular intervals toward the bunker. Thus, 10 or 15 times a day, the operators got to demonstrate their skill in letting go of the handles as soon as the proximity light went on. I had 4 hours of that, like everybody else. I was nervous until the first attack, when I saw how little there was to it. The light went on, I let go, the gun aimed, and when the drone peeped over the horizon, zzzt! Nice touch of color, the molten metal spraying through space. Otherwise, not too exciting. So none of us were worried about the upcoming graduation exercise, thinking it would be just more of the same. Miami base attacked on the 13th day, with 2 simultaneous missiles streaking over opposite sides of the horizon at some 40 kilometers per second. The laser vaporized the first one with no trouble, but the second got within 8 clicks of the bunker before it was hit. We were coming back from maneuvers, about a click away from the bunker. I wouldn't have seen it happen if I hadn't been looking directly at the bunker the moment of the attack. The second missile sent a shower of molten debris straight toward the bunker. 11 pieces hit, and as we later reconstructed it, this is what happened. The first casualty was Majima, so well-loved Majima, inside the bunker, who was hit in the back and the head and died instantly. With the drop in pressure, the LSU went into high gear. Friedman was standing in front of the main airco outlet and was blown into the opposite wall, hard enough to knock him unconscious. He died of decompression before the others could get him to his suit. Everybody else managed to stagger through the gale and get into their suits, but Garcia's suit had been holed and didn't do him any good. By the time we got there, they had turned off the LSU and were welding up the holes in the wall. One man was trying to scrape up the unrecognizable mess that had been Majima. I could hear him sobbing and retching. They had already taken Garcia and Friedman outside for burial. The captain took over the repair detail from Potter. Sergeant Cortez led the sobbing man over to a corner and came back to work on cleaning up Majima's remains, alone. He didn't order anybody to help, and nobody volunteered.